Alrighty, next up. Hi, Katie Proudfoot.
Hello.
You know, this is going to be a little bit better. Last year, we kind of gotcha.
Skirted around some things?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it had more to do with what you've been on the job about a day and a half at that point. And we drug Katie up here, and she didn't know what she was getting into. But anyway, Katie is our animal welfare, animal behavior person there in, or one of them there in the College of Vet Medicine. It works with a couple different species, one more than others, but, you know, we're not going to talk about dairy cows too much, Katie, okay? We might have to a little bit, but not too much. Anyway, the animal welfare issues that much as we just talked with Greg on the antibiotic resistance, the animal welfare issues are really moved into the consumer market much more, and I've worked that side of it for 25 years, I think, now. In the old days, it had more to do with, we don't think you should treat animals thus and so, so we're going to protest you. Now, whether it's the activists on that side getting smarter in how they handle it, or whether it is truly, and we don't know this from our consumer studies, we don't know it yet, whether it really truly is a consumer shift, the markets and the middle in the markets, as in retailers, as in fast food operations, those folks are getting much more involved with how we treat our critters before they end up in their restaurants. So the discussion often comes down to, are we really talking about welfare, or are we talking about the ideological side of it that is much more about animal rights? And I don't think, you know, even those of us who deal with this a lot, and those folks who raise critters, I don't know that we often get the distinction as much as we should. So I throw you the softball question to begin with, and that is, give me a really clear definition of animal rights and animal welfare. Where do they differ?
Okay, good. So how many of you have heard the terms animal welfare before? Most of you?
You
and animal rights? Do you feel like you can really confidently define what animal welfare means? I don't see any hands. And that's usually, when I ask that question, I get the same response, as most people don't really know exactly what animal welfare means. So often it is equated with animal rights.
Right.
So animal rights is the philosophy that animals shouldn't be used for anything that humans use them for that aren't a benefit to the animals. So animals used in research, animals used for food, essentially should not be used by humans. Whereas animal welfare accepts and appreciates the relationship between animals and humans. But then the next step is to just ensure that those animals that are being used for research and for food production are cared for in a way that is up to some sort of standard, which is partially driven by public perception and consumer concerns and people's values about what it means to be, to have a good quality of life for an animal versus what the science says. So that generally tends to revolve around the idea that animals be healthy and don't experience disease. So an animal that's sick has a poorer quality of life than a healthy animal, but also isn't experiencing negative mental states like pain and has some level of ability to perform natural behaviors or live in a more natural environment, whether that's outdoors or bringing nature indoors as well.
Okay, well, you know, you said a few things there that allow me to start to be grumpy and ornery, but I'm going to try to behave a little bit. Animal rights, don't ride the horse, if we're not talking eating the thing. Don't eat the horse, for that matter. Animal welfare, you can ride the horse, use the horse, as long as it's humane and you don't let something my size get on the horse and ride. So that's a decent, okay.
Yeah.
How, I guess the question, and this is the one that when I work with livestock farmers, the one that we always get into, because you said experience pain, you said those things. How do we, number one, assess animal welfare from a scientific perspective? Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily what the public wants to hear us talk about, but, I mean, how do we know when that animal is feeling good, so to speak?
Good question.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... You know, they're not biting me, so they must be good.
Yeah, so we can't. Unfortunately, we can't ask animals how they feel, like we can do with humans. So we have to infer based on their behavior what they're experiencing. So measuring things like health, that's why we have veterinary medicine. It helps us to define very objectively what is sick and healthy. But then when you get into more mental states, that becomes more challenging. But there's certainly research in cognitive science and neuroscience that's making huge developments. So pain, for example, measuring behavioral indicators of pain, like for rats, they actually use facial expressions, which unfortunately you can't do that with cows and horses, but rats actually show, like their face will wince when they're experiencing something painful. Other animals will vocalize, things like that, that are, or clearly showing discomfort, like there's a wound and they're paying attention to it, so we can find ways to objectively measure that.
Okay, so we can measure that. Let's talk a little bit about some of the behaviors that we should be watching for in certain species if we are producers out there. I'll even let you pick your dairy cows as a species, but then we're going to go to pigs.
Okay.
So give me some examples of the kinds of problems that we might easily run into in a production operation that we should be watching a certain behavior for.
So lameness in dairy cows.
Oh, that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, and that's clearly caused by a painful condition in the foot or the leg.
Well, it could be a nutrition problem. In some species.
Yeah. Well, the nutrition is causing
the pain.
Condition.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We can get into the causes if you want, because it's definitely multifactorial. It could be trauma. It could be nutrition.
Right.
It could be just standing for long periods of time. Cow comfort comes into play too.
So if we see that expression of a problem, if we see it, then we need to start dissecting the problem to figure out what's causing it. Okay,
yeah.
That's one example.
Others for dairy cattle, you might see abnormal behaviors, so calves that cross-suck. So that might be an example where they're not provided maybe a nipple. If you're feeding with a bucket, you're more likely to see them suck on other calves. So, but providing them something else to suck on can reduce that behavior.
Okay.
Want me to stay with dairy cows?
No. Pigs.
Some abnormal behaviors. Pigs get lame too. Sows.
Yeah.
Lameness is a problem with sows. You see some other abnormal behaviors. Like, in general, pigs and cows and other ungulates, like horses and giraffes, have oral problems. So pigs will bite tails. So
tail biting
is a big issue. And other types of injuries that are caused by chewing on things, bar biting, things like that,
sure,
that they shouldn't be chewing on.
So those are some examples. Do I remember correctly, do you have an audit program? Do you do audits?
I do assessments for the farm program.
Okay.
And I'm pretty familiar with most of the audits and assessments that are out there.
Okay, so if I'm a producer and I need to I want to take a better look at what I'm going. Maybe I do have a problem. I've got tail biting or whatever it might be. But maybe I also want to do some things because my retailer says I need to be able to produce an assessment of my production practices. Where do I start in terms of getting that kind of an assessment of my environment for my critters?
So doing it yourself, or who do you talk to?
Well, we're gonna start by doing it myself.
Okay. So for dairy, the main things you look at are lameness, body condition, and hock lesions. So if you see any lesions in the legs or the knees. So measuring that and sort of getting an idea of the percentage of that on your farm, you can compare to some of the averages out there. So lameness, often some of the requirements on audits and assessments says less than 5 or 10%.
Okay.
Same with leg lesions. Swollen hocks, I think it's less than closer to 1% or 2%, and same with body condition. You want less than 1% of your cows being extremely thin, so on the very tail end of body condition scoring. But then on top of that, you look at facilities. So you see if there's, you kind of use the animal to tell you if you have a lameness problem, could it be, or hock lesions, for instance, could it just be insufficient bedding? Is it that you have mattresses because you don't have deep bedded stalls? Is it, what are the sorts of things that might be leading to those problems? And then can you go from there?
And then, of course, if you're working with certain retailers, you may have a professional auditor,
yep,
that needs to come in, and there are a number of thing, a number of outfits that do that based on, usually based on who you're supplying.
Exactly, yeah. And every audit is different. So if it's a producer-based audit, like the farm program or PQA for pigs,
right.
Often they focus more on sort of the health side of things,
sure.
and injuries, whereas some of the other audits, like certified humane, animal welfare approved, they look for more things like access to pasture and outdoor, because that's sort of where their values lay. They think
sure.
that that's important, whereas on the other side, producers value more of the health side of things.
Okay. We're running out of time.
Oh, that was quick.
Well, we're not out of time. We're running out. I guess maybe you should tell us a little bit about some of the kinds of work you're doing now to give us some more... guidelines, give us some more tools, if you will, to assess the quality of animal life on our farms. And we haven't talked about this ahead of time, so I'm going to let you maybe tick off a couple of the projects and then some of the programming that you're doing to help farmers handle that.
Sure. So my background and interest is all in transition cows, so cows around the time of calving.
Sure.
With the idea being, can we create an environment that might help reduce some of the problems associated with calving, like diseases that happen after calving and dystocia, difficult calvings? So some of my previous and hopefully future research is around what stocking density in the calving pen does some of these problems occur. So is stocking density influencing a cow's natural behavior, maternal behavior around calving, and is that influencing her ability to calve naturally? In some of my previous research, we found that cows on a dairy farm, just like they would on a range, like a cow-calf operation, want to find a secluded environment to calve as well. So they look for a hiding place, so to create an area. And often in dairy barns, our maternity pens are right next to the parlor or the office,
right.
or very high traffic areas. Which could be influencing their ability to calve normally. So try to encourage producers to think about, can I make this a bit more of a quiet place for them?
As we wrap up, let's see if you get this one right, Katie.
There's never a right or wrong answer to animal welfare, so.
There might be on this one.
All right.
You mentioned McDonald's and they're requiring cage-free chickens.
That's right.
Okay.
Did I mention that?
In some other conversations.
Oh, okay.
We seem to have, what is it, Chipotle with their no gestation stalls.
Smithfield's
Tyson. Doing the,
yep.
those types of things. Are those conditions that they're putting on their producers legitimate and right?
Good question. So, and that really comes down to the value component of animal welfare. So there's a scientific answer to that, which I would say most of the public probably wouldn't agree with, or some of the public might not agree with, and then there's the more values component. So I think a really good example are laying hens. So McDonald's
right.
just came out with a statement yesterday that they're going to buy only from cage-free producers by 2020, I think it was. But all the animal welfare science has actually been in taking a cage and actually making it better for the chicken, so creating an enriched environment where they can perch and do some of the behaviors that we know chickens really like to do. So with this move towards cage-free, there's actually a lot of animal welfare concerns with cage-free.
Absolutely.
So it's a bit of a challenge, and it's unfortunate for all those scientists that have done the research on the cages, and it's now out of their control, really, because retailers are making that move. And I know with swine producers going from gestation stalls to group housing, there's a reason why we put sows in gestation stalls, because they fight in groups. So now what we need to do is accept the fact that gestation stalls are going away, and we need to find a way to reduce aggression and reduce the problems in group housing, because that's where it's going.
Right. And to me, that was pretty much the right answer, too. But to me, that also says we've got some new research that needs to be done.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe doing a better job of documenting. And we've also got some new educational programs being done. Having worked with a lot of these critters in the past and all, you know, when we talk about free-range chickens and that being much more humane, I just have visions of what happens when you put a bunch of chickens together and let them get at each other.
Yeah.
You know, group housing on sows. Oh my golly, I've seen people get hurt because of that big time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at the same time, you know, jamming too many birds in too small a cage. Maybe in some cases we did go too far to that extreme. Gestation stalls, you know, how long do they need to be in there versus some other things. And, you know, and some of the industry people have made some good middle-of-the-road type adjustments. Now that's being thrown out. So, anyway, interesting topic and certainly something we'll continue in the livestock industry to have to deal with. And I guess maybe that's job security, Katie, for you. I don't know.
I got great job security.
There you go. All right, Katie Proudfoot. And a little